Good evening. Protests in Belarus. Thousands arrested and a candidate in exile. Kamala Harris makes her first appearance with Joe Biden. Should revolutionaries vote? And an eviction crisis looms in New York. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Wednesday, August 12th, 2020. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo denounced the response of the Belarusian government to protests following Alexander Lukashenko's presidential election victory on Sunday. He made the comments at a press conference in Prague on Wednesday during a visit to the Czech Republic.
We urge that the nonviolent protesters be protected and not harmed. It's not in anyone's best interest to do that. And we will continue to speak about the risks to the Belarusian people.
Pompeo's comments came after several nights of violent protest. The Interior Ministry says about 6,000 people have been detained. One protester has died during the demonstrations. Lukashenko has been in power in Belarus since 1994. He won the August 9th election with more than 80% of the ballots. His closest opponent, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, received 10% of the vote. She has since fled the country for Lithuania. And Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota fended off a well-funded primary challenger on Tuesday, sweeping to victory by more than 15 percentage points. Omar represents the district where George Floyd was killed in a chokehold by a Minneapolis police officer. She embraced calls to completely restructure the police department and divert money to social services. And a Georgia Republican, Marjorie Taylor Greene, a construction executive, handily won a primary battle for a House seat. Greene has said that Muslims do not belong in government and expressed her belief in the baseless conspiracy theory called QAnon. Greene was congratulated by Trump, who tweeted, "Marjorie is strong on everything and never gives up. A real winner." And Joe Biden introduced the United States to his vice presidential running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, today. Harris says America is in the grips of a crisis of conscience that calls out for new leadership.
As I said, Joe, when you called me, I am incredibly honored by this responsibility, and I'm ready to get to work. I am ready to get to work. After the most competitive primary in history, the country received a resounding message that Joe was the person to lead us forward. And Joe, I'm so proud to stand with you. And I do so mindful of all the heroic and ambitious women before me whose sacrifice, determination, and resilience makes my presence here today even possible. This is a moment of real consequence for America. Everything we care about, our economy, our health, our children, the kind of country we live in, it's all on the line. We're reeling from the worst public health crisis in a century. The president's mismanagement of the pandemic has plunged us into the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. And we're experiencing a moral reckoning with racism and systemic injustice that has brought a new coalition of conscience to the streets of our country demanding change. America is crying out for leadership. Yet we have a president who cares more about himself than the people who elected him. A president who is making every challenge we face even more difficult to solve. But here's the good news. We don't have to accept the failed government of Donald Trump and Mike Pence. In just 83 days, we have a chance to choose a better future for our country. So, Joe, Dr. Biden, thank you for the trust you've placed in me. Jill, I know you will be an incredible First Lady. And my husband, Doug, and I are so grateful to become a part of your extended family. And ever since I received Joe's call, I've been thinking, yes, about the first Biden, that I really came to know, and that, of course, is Joe's beloved son, one of his beloved sons, Bo.
Senator Kamala Harris, Bo Biden was Joe Biden's oldest son. He died of brain cancer on May 30th, 2015, one of two tragedies to strike Biden. In December 1971, Senator-elect Biden's wife and daughter were killed in a traffic crash. Biden raised the specter of the fascist violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, that occurred 3 years ago today. It killed activist Heather Heyer when Trump infamously said there were very fine people on both sides.
Today is not only the day I'm proud to introduce Senator Kamala Harris as the vice presidential nominee of the Democratic Party. It's also the third anniversary of that terrible day in Charlottesville. Remember what it felt like to see those neo-Nazis, close your eyes, and those Klansmen, white supremacists, coming out of fields, carrying lighted torches, faces contorted, bulging, veins, pouring into the streets of a historic American city, spewing the same anti-Semitic bile we heard in Hitler's Germany in the 30s. Remember how it felt to see a violent clash ensue between those celebrating hate and those standing against it? It was a wake-up call for all of us as a country. For me, it was a call to action. My father used to say, silence is complicity, not original to him, but he believed it. At that moment, I knew I couldn't stand by and let Donald Trump, a man who went on to say, when asked about what he thought, he said there were very fine people on both sides. Quote, very fine people on both sides. No president of the United States of America has ever said anything like that. See him continue to attack everything that makes America, America. I knew we were in the battle for the soul of the nation. That's when I decided to run. And I'm proud now to have Senator Harris at my side in that battle because she shares with the same intensity I do. For she's someone who knows what's at stake. The question is for all Americans to answer. Who are we as a nation? What do we stand for? And most importantly, what do we want to be?
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. As the November smackdown between the Trump-Pence and Biden-Harris teams heats up, there are some spoilers waiting in the wings. The Green Party has no interest in allowing the Democrats to hoist the progressive mantle against Trump. A Green Party candidate for president, Howie Hawkins, says if the GOP has a lock on voter suppression, the Democrats are champions of party suppression.
They are on the same page on politics. He's the legislative architect of mass incarceration and mass surveillance. And she has a record. She called herself top cop as San Francisco DA and California Attorney General. And although she's moved with the uprising against police brutality and racism in recent months in her pronouncements, she's running with Biden. So, for example, she did say she would, when she's running for president, legalize marijuana, but Biden and the Democratic draft platform do not. So I think she'll, you know, reinforce everything Biden stands for. So in terms of policy, I don't see any difference.
And your response to the executive orders and the lack of a stimulus plan?
His executive orders are fantasies. He says he's going to provide an unemployment supplement. And it's questionable whether he can do it under the Constitution. He can't appropriate funds. He says he's going to take them from FEMA's Emergency Relief Fund, but the amount would only last a month if he was able to do that. So this is basically a message to people saying he's doing something when he's not. And I think, you know, his whole response to the coronavirus epidemic, both the deaths and illnesses and also the economic response, along with the Democrats, shows the two governing parties are presiding over a failed state. I mean, Trump gave up. He's a loser. But where is Joe Biden? He could convene the White House press corps like Andrew Cuomo was convening the press corps here in New York early in the pandemic and pound away at what we need. We need test, contact, trace, and quarantine to suppress community spread of the virus so we can go safely back to work and school. And all the organized societies around the world are doing that. We can't seem to manage that. And Biden is just letting Trump hang himself with his own stupidities. But Biden, you know, he's saying, I'm going to be the new leader, the new president. Well, show us some leadership now because people are dying. So I hold him, I think he's complicit in the deaths.
Are you aware that the Revolutionary Communist Party, the former Maoist organization led by Bob Avakian, has come out in support of Biden and is calling on people to vote for Biden?
I think Trump has got the left scared stupid. I mean, the left has to stand for itself and put its own program forward. And when it lines up behind Biden, nobody knows they're the left. They voted for Biden. If they're for Medicare for All, they get lost in the sauce because they voted for Biden. They don't know that vote was for Medicare for All. And I think that's symptomatic of the problem on the left. It doesn't have enough confidence in its own program and ability to reach masses of people with popular programs like Medicare for All. So it's symptomatic of the times.
How do you see the campaign, your campaign, in the next 84 days?
The next 3 weeks, we're still fighting to get on the ballot. And the Democrats are challenging our petitions, trying to bleed us dry with court expenses. And they're forcing us to go out in this pandemic against public health guidelines to get signatures. So party suppression by the Democrats is part of voter suppression that the Republicans obviously engage in a massive way as well. We have that here in New York. They added a bill to the budget back in April that tripled the requirements to keep our ballot line in terms of the votes we get, and they doubled the frequency. We got to get it every 2 years now instead of every 4 years. Once we find out how many ballots we're on, we expect to be on over 40. Then it's speaking to the people and mobilizing them to get a vote for what we're talking about, a Medicare for All, a full-strength Green New Deal, peace initiatives in the face of this new nuclear arms race, an economic bill of rights to end poverty and economic despair. So that's the way it's going to be for the next 84 days.
Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins. Although progressives have been generally supportive of the Biden-Harris ticket, not everyone agrees the Democratic team will be an improvement over Trump. Staff writer for the American Prospect is Alex Salmon. He says Harris was known as a conservative law and order district attorney in San Francisco.
She is someone who in recent years has really talked about her progressive bona fides and her dedication to criminal justice reform and racial justice and these sorts of things. But if we look closely at her record, she's actually someone who has very much been a powerful opponent of those things time and time again at various levels of her career. So it's important to look closely at. And when you do, it paints a rather unflattering picture of someone who is actually not invested in criminal justice reform, but has been a considerable opponent of its advancement time and time again.
Now, the Supreme Court, including Anthony Kennedy, a very conservative member of the Supreme Court, ruled against her and forced her or tried to get her to start releasing people from the overcrowded prisons of California, which were considered a violation of their right against cruel and unusual punishment. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So the Supreme Court, which is obviously not known to be a particularly progressive chamber, was basically aghast at the conditions of California's prisons and said that they were the violation of the Eighth Amendment. So they were constitutionally required to decarcerate, basically. They said in their ruling that there was no solution other than to get people out of these jails and do it quickly. And as Attorney General, the state, Kamala, was basically tasked with enacting this decarceration mandate. And for 2 years, she basically refused to do it, to the point that commentators were saying that she had basically courted a constitutional crisis by using the same defense that Southern governors used in the 1960s to fight against desegregation. The court said unequivocally, these prisoners need to be released. They're at no risk to the public. There's no risk for recidivism. And she refused to do it to the point that we had this outright confrontation between the courts and her that almost splintered the legal system in a very significant way.
Jim Clyburn, who is probably more than any one person responsible for Biden getting the nomination, said that America is going through a centrist position right now and that Biden and Harris are the perfect centrists for where Americans are at right now.
I think it's tough to square that with one of the largest popular uprisings we've ever seen in this country. Just the sheer number of people in the streets would beg to differ on a historic scale beyond even the civil rights movement in terms of participation. So I don't think that that one exactly holds up in terms of examination. That's to say nothing, of course, of the coronavirus pandemic, the economic consequences that that has brought. It's hard for me to believe that that's where the country is at politically, that that's where the pulse is. And it's a shocking statement in a lot of ways to hear that.
Donald Trump has come out. I get the impression he's attacking Kamala Harris as someone who was opposed to his decarceration. He claims he's the one who's been decarcerating people and reforming justice, and that Kamala Harris is out of step with Donald Trump.
The comparison to the Trump administration is apt, especially because the pitch of the Biden campaign to this point is basically like, let's return to a degree of normalcy. Let's undo the kind of most egregious excesses of Trump's governance. But what we've seen with Kamala Harris's record in particular in this case is behavior that more or less is what Bill Barr has been doing on behalf of the Trump administration. So defying the Supreme Court outright and refusing to enact its rulings and undermining the balance of powers. I mean, these are the things that we have seen Trump and his lackeys do kind of unapologetically. And it's very confusing to see the Democratic Party elevate someone who basically has engaged in the same sort of behavior. There's a legitimacy issue here that is going to come up, and I don't think it'll be the undoing of Biden and Harris, but I think it's a very important thing to talk about because the decisions the party has made to this point in terms of who it's putting forward as party leadership doesn't exactly square with the messaging that they've sent in terms of undoing the legacy of Trump. So I think that's something that's worth bearing in mind.
Alex Salmon is staff writer for the American Prospect. Weighing in on this election is a surprise party. That is the Revolutionary Communist Party, a group that calls for a real revolution in the United States by way of determined nonviolent protest. They've never run a candidate or supported a candidate for president in recent years, but 4 years of Trump has the group convinced Americans should pull out all the stops to get rid of what they call the Trump-Pence regime. The leader of the RCP is Bob Avakian, and he published a statement on August 1st. This is a brief excerpt.
Without placing fundamental reliance on this, using all appropriate means to work for the removal of this regime must include voting against Trump, assuming the election is actually held. To be clear, this means not a protest vote for some candidate who has no chance of winning, but actually voting for the Democratic Party candidate Biden in order to effectively vote against Trump. This is not because Biden and the Democratic Party in general have suddenly become something other than what they are, representatives and instruments of this exploitative, oppressive, and literally murderous system of capitalism imperialism.
The leader of the RCP, Bob Avakian. The host of the RCP-oriented Revolution Nothing Less show is Andy Z. He says the stakes are too high not to use every nonviolent means available.
It's not a flat-out call for voting for Joe Biden. This is a very sharp statement on how, in this period, there is a tremendous existential danger for humanity, and that everyone has to recognize that right now. You know, it begins very early. He says, right now, for everyone who's concerned with ending injustice and oppression and with the question of whether humanity will have a future worth living or will have a future at all, removing the Trump-Pence fascist regime from power is an immediate and urgent and truly historic imperative. And then there are several sections of this that go into that this is a fascist regime, and that has real meaning. That has real meaning for the lives of millions of people, billions of people, even around the world. And in that context, if there is an election, people have to be mobilized to take every available nonviolent means of protest to drive this regime from power. And that if there isn't that nonviolent massive movement on a scale equal to and beyond what we saw in the last 65 days since the murder of George Floyd, then just relying on voting will be disastrous. Voting is set in this statement in the context of a mass movement to drive out the Trump-Pence fascist regime, every struggle for social justice, for environmental justice, for Black lives, for Latino lives, for LGBTQ lives, women's lives, every struggle has a tremendous objective interest in seeing this regime removed from power. And no, it is not that we can, Biden would be better because we can pressure him to do, give us the reforms we need. No, that's not the question at all.
I've gone across America back and forth, and what I see among most of the Trump supporters outside of like the Proud Boys, which are everywhere, I know, and the skinheads, what I really see are a bunch of sort of sad elderly people grasping onto this thing around Trump.
Paul, here's what you're overlooking. You're overlooking that there is a real army, that there's those are forces that they brought to Portland and Seattle, the special BORTAC division of the Homeland Security Border Patrol. These people interpenetrate with these movements, and they are way up in the military. It's true that some of the people at the top of the military are very panicked about what Trump has done and the major change he's making. And this should be an indication, not that the good generals are going to be on our side, but it should tell you how serious it is.
How does voting play into this? Because that's what we're talking about today.
Voting plays into it if there is an election, that we need to take every available means to issue a resounding defeat with the mass movement. If there's a resounding defeat and he declares it's illegitimate, then that mass movement will be able to bring in more people from the middle. It will have international legitimacy. We have to recognize that. I'm not talking about getting 10,000 votes from the left on here. That's not the point. The point, although they should vote, but in this election, for the reason I'm saying, but they should more importantly and more fundamentally be out in the streets. And in that context, voting for the Democratic candidate who has a chance of defeating Trump matters. This is not the, and that's why in this election, not in every election, Bush was very bad. We didn't vote in that election because they really were both were worse. But this is there's a qualitative change in the form of rule that this regime represents. And they have told you this. Steve Bannon has told you. Rudy Giuliani has told you. Barr has told you. I don't know how many times people have to be told before they actually say, well, actually, there's something here. And it's not just Trump with his narcissistic personality disorders. That's the perfect person, as it turned out, in a place like America to bring about a fascist America wrapped in the American flag, wrapped in a lot of know-nothingism and all this kind of stuff. So people should be clear. This is an open white supremacist, and you haven't seen nothing yet.
Andy Z is the host of the Revolution Nothing Less show, available on YouTube. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In local news, an uptick in coronavirus cases has been detected in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, a jump that Mayor Bill de Blasio called a warning light in the city's battle with COVID-19. The city is now flooding the area and attempting to get every resident in the southern Brooklyn neighborhood's 38,000 households tested for the virus. There are also reports of a surge of COVID-19 cases in the Tremont section of the Bronx. Mayor de Blasio addressed the news with Annabel Palma, chief equity officer of the city's Test and Trace Corps, and his newly appointed health commissioner, Dave Chokshi.
Fact is, what we've seen is we can reach a very high percentage of folks. There is a recognition out there that participating in contact tracing is important. So I have to say, so far, we've seen a high level of cooperation. It's not perfect by any stretch. Sometimes it is hard to track people down. But I do want to say, when we started out, we didn't know what the basic attitude of New Yorkers would be. It's been positive and surprising how much people do engage in the process. Who wants to jump in? Or, starting here and then Dr. Varma, who wants to jump in?
So we definitely have to get you the numbers for Tremont, for those folks who tested and were contacted. But as of July 29th in Sunset Park, we had 104 cases, and 80 of them completed the intake process. The 80 cases that completed the intake process gave us 130 contacts, and out of those contacts that they gave us, 82% of those contacts were household contacts, meaning they were individuals who lived under the same roof with the individual that tested positive.
Thank you, doctors. You want to add anything?
Yes, sir. I would just underline the point that it's so important when a case is identified that we have contact tracing that's done to interrupt the chain of transmission. So this is how our outreach efforts link to our testing efforts and link to our contact tracing efforts. And together, that allows us to be proactive and prevent the spread of COVID-19.
And that was City Hall today. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, August 12th, 2020. The news producer Linda Perry, our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News in New York, I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Thanks for joining us.